Side 2. Tape script 8. How to Live to be 100 or More by George Burns.
People keep asking me, George, you're 88. How do you do it? You make films, you do television, you give concerts, you record albums, smoke cigars, drink martinis, go out with pretty girls. How do you do it? It's simple. For instance, a martini. You fill a glass with ice, then pour in some gin and a touch of dry vermouth. Add an olive, and you got yourself a martini. Today you don't have to worry about getting old. You have to worry about resting. So I also do exercises and walk a lot. Walking's even easier than making a martini. I take one foot, put it in front of the other foot, and I take the other foot and put it in front of the other foot, and before I know it, I'm walking. And you don't even need an olive. Every morning I walk a mile and a half. My advice is to walk whenever you can. It's free. You feel better and look trim. If you want to live to be 100 or older, you can't just sit around waiting for it to happen. You have to get up and go after it. There's no point in kidding yourself. When you get older, you slow down. You wear out a little. But right now, I'm 88, and there isn't a thing I can't do today that I couldn't do when I was 18. Of course, I was pathetic when I was 18. I wasn't so hot when I was 25, either. I saved everything for now. I hate to brag, but I'm very good at now. Here are my other secrets for long life. Think positive. If you ask me what is the single most important key to longevity, I would have to say it's avoiding worry, stress, and tension. And if you didn't ask me, I'd still have to say it. Worry, stress, and tension are not only unpleasant, but can shorten your life. My attitude is, if something is beyond your control, there's no point worrying about it. And if you can do something about it, then there's still nothing to worry about. I feel that way when the plane I'm on is bouncing around in turbulence. It's not my problem. The pilot gets a lot of money to fly that plane. Let him worry about it. I can honestly say that I was not even uptight about my heart bypass several years ago. It was beyond my control. It was a doctor's business. When I came round from the anesthetic, I heard the surgeon say, George, you did great. You're just fine. I said, Doctor, I wasn't the least bit concerned. Really? He said. I was a nervous wreck. Even that didn't bother me. Then he handed me his bill, and I passed out. Stay active. I know that for some people, retirement works out fine. They enjoy it. I also know that for a great many others, it presents lots of problems. To me, the biggest danger of retirement is what it can do to your attitude. When you have all that time on your hands, you think old. You act old. It's a mistake. I see people who, the minute they get to be 65, start rehearsing to be old. They practice grunting when they get up. And by the time they get to be 70, they've made it. They're a hit. They're now old. Not me. When you're around my age, you gotta keep occupied. You gotta do something that'll get you out of bed. I never made any money in bed. Yes, find something that'll make you get out of bed. Like an interest, a hobby, a business, a pretty girl. Here we are, back in bed again. At my age, at least, let me talk about it. Challenge yourself. When my wife, Gracie, retired in 1958, I could have retired too. Even today, I don't have to do what I'm doing. I don't have to travel around giving concerts, making movies, doing television specials, recording country music albums, being a sex symbol. I firmly believe that you should keep working as long as you can. And if you can't, try to find something that'll interest you. Don't wait for it to happen. Make it happen. Remember, you can't help getting older, but you don't have to get old. I look to the future, because that's where I'm going to spend the rest of my life. I feel sorry for people who live in the past. I know it was cheaper then, but you can't keep looking in a rearview mirror unless you enjoy having a stiff neck. If you really think your life is over and you have no place to go, I advise you to take very short steps. It'll take you longer to get there. I don't live in the past. I live in a house in Beverly Hills. It's more comfortable. Actually, you may not believe this, but I don't waste time looking through scrapbooks of my career or rereading my old reviews. They were painful enough to read the first time. I find it's best to fall in love with what you're doing today. The things I did yesterday, I was in love with yesterday. But that romance is over. I'm very fickle. There's an old saying, life begins at 40. That's silly. Life begins every morning when you wake up. Open your mind to it. Don't just sit there. Do things. Swim the English Channel. Find a cure for the common cold. Be the first to go over the Niagara Falls in a rocking chair. You see, the possibilities are endless. If all else fails, try doing something nice for somebody who doesn't expect it. You'll be surprised how good you feel. The scouts have the right idea. Many's the time I've helped a young lady across the street and over to my place. You should see all my badges. The point is, with a good positive attitude and a little bit of luck, there's no reason you can't live to be 100. And once you've done that, you really got it made, because very few people die over 100.
Tape script 9. A short conversation.
We had a lovely time at Jim and Chris's last night.
Did you? That's nice.
Jim always cooks such wonderful meals.
Does he? I didn't realise he could cook.
He's just finished a cordon bleu cookery course at night school.
Has he? Well, I hope we get invited for dinner soon.
Well, they said they were going to invite you and Sarah next weekend.
Are they? That's great. I'll look forward to that.
Unit 5, Tape Script 10.
They, by Siegfried Sassoon. The bishop tells us, when the boys come back, they will not be the same, for they'll have fought in a just cause. They lead the last attack on Antichrist. Their comrades' blood has bought new right to breed an honourable race. They have challenged death and dared him face to face. We're none of us the same, the boys reply, for George lost both his legs and Bill's stone blind. Poor Jim shot through the lungs and liked to die, and Bert's gone syphilitic. You'll not find a chap who served that hasn't found some change. And the bishop said, the ways of God are strange.
Tape script 11. The Christmas Truce, 1914. Part 1.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, they're copping it down Railway Wood tonight.
No, no, not that. Listen. What is it? Singing, isn't it?
It's those Welsh bastards in the next trench.
That's Jerry, that is.
Yeah, it is Jerry. It's coming from over there.
Sing up, Jerry. Let's hear you.
Oh, nice, wasn't it?
Tommy! Hello, Tommy!
Hi. He heard us.
Hello?
Fröhliche Weihnacht.
Hey?
Happy Christmas.
Oh.
Happy Christmas. Christmas.
Hey! Yeah, it's Christmas.
Part 2.
That scene from the West End musical of the 1960s, Oh, What a Lovely War, is a pretty accurate illustration of the kind of thing that happened in several places on the Western Front on that Christmas Eve of 1914. Listen to the account of someone who was actually there. Graham Williams, a rifleman with the London Rifle Brigade, was on sentry duty that night.
On the stroke of 11 o'clock, which by German time was midnight because they were now ahead of us, lights began to appear all along the German trenches, and then people started singing. They started singing Heilige Nacht, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, Silent Night. So I thought, well, this is extraordinary. And I woke up all the other chaps, and all the other sentries must have done the same thing to come and see what was going on. And they sang this carol right through, and we responded with English Christmas carols, and they replied with German again, and we came to Come All Ye Faithful. They joined in singing that with us, and they were singing it in Latin, Adeste Fideles.
So by the time you got to that carol, both sides were singing the same carol together?
Both singing the same carol together. Then after that, one of the Germans called out, Come over and see us, Tommy. Come over and see us. So I could speak German pretty fluently in those days. So I told Ben, I said, no, you come over and see us. I said, nein, come to S, come and see Herr Fritz. And well, nobody did come that time. And eventually the lights all burnt out and quietened down and went on with the usual routine for the night. Next morning, I was asleep when I woke up. I found everyone was walking out into no man's land, meeting the Germans, talking to them, and it was a wonderful scene. Couldn't believe it.
Further along the line, in the perfect weather, Private Harold Startin of the Old Contemptibles was enjoying that morning too. He couldn't speak any German, but that didn't stop him making friends.
We were Tommy to them, and they were all Fritz to us. If you'd met your brother, they couldn't have been more cordial towards you, or sharing their goodies with you. They were giving us cigars not as big as your arm. And tobacco.
Were you frightened at first? Were you suspicious at all? Because these were people
no.
that you'd been trained to hate, weren't they?
No, there was no hatred. We'd got no grudge against them. They'd got no grudge against us. See, we were the best of pals. Although we were there to kill one another, there were no two ways about that at all. They helped us bury our dead, and we've buried our dead with their dead. I've seen many a cross with a German name and number on and a British name and number on. In death not divided.
Did you do other work during the truce as well? Was it just burying the dead, or were there other things you
there
got
were
done?
Strengthening the trenches, borrowing their tools.
You actually borrowed German tools
we
to strengthen
German
your trenches?
We borrowed German tools. They'd lend it you, they'd come and help you strengthen your defences against them.
Part 3.
Not only was the truce more extensive than anyone has realised before, it also lasted much longer than has been believed until now. In some areas, the war started up again on New Year's Day, but in the part of the line where Harold Startin was, the truce lasted a lot longer than that.
Ours went on for 6 weeks. You can read in the history books about Sir John French when he heard of it, he were all against it. But our truce went on for 6 weeks. And the Wurttemberg regiment, they got relieved before we did, and they told us they thought it were the Prussian Guards going to relieve them. And if it was, we should hear 3 rifle shots at intervals. And if we only heard 3 shots, we should know the Prussian Guards that were opposite us then, and we'd got to keep down.
Because they would be fiercer than the Wurttembergers.
Yes.
Can you remember particular Germans that you spoke to? Over 6 weeks, you must have made friends.
I spoke to one. Otter comes from Stuttgart, as he's been over to England to see me.
So you made friends during the truce and kept in touch after the war?
Made friends during the truce and friends after.
Part 4.
By early February 1915, the truce was over. 2 people, Malcolm Brown and Shirley Seaton, wrote a book about the Christmas truce, determined that this should be an event that should not be forgotten.
This was the first year of the first total war, a war which has become legendary for its viciousness and brutality. And we think it's really rather remarkable that in that war, there occurred, beyond question, the greatest instance of friendship and fraternisation between opposing warring forces. And though at the time that event disappeared over the horizon as the great battles of 1915, 16, 17 came on, now when one looks back on it, one can see that this was, as it were, the lighting of a light, a shining light, the making of a gesture, the laying down of a sort of a first glimmer of protest against the concept that nations should be locked in massive and total war together.
Goodbye, goodbye. Wipe the tear, baby dear, from your eye. Though it's hard to part, I know. I'd be tickled to death to go. Don't cry, don't sigh. There's a silver lining in the sky. Bonsoir, old thing, cheerio, chin chin, au revoir, toodaloo, good
Tape script 12. Emphatic structures. 1.
What made it an army was discipline and organization.
2.
What I like about John is his honesty.
3.
What made it an army was the way it was organized.
4.
What I like about John is the fact that he's so honest.
5.
Drill is what transformed these men into an army.
6.
Money is what makes the world go round.
7.
It was pairs of individuals who thrust at each other.
8.
It was John who broke the vase.
Unit 6. Tape script 13A. Pygmalion. Extract 2.
Well, I think that's the whole show.
It's really amazing. I haven't taken half of it in, you know.
Would you like to go over any of it again?
No, thank you. Not now. I'm quite done up for this morning.
Tired of listening to sounds?
Yes, a fearful strain. I rather fancied myself because I can pronounce 24 distinct vowel sounds. But your 130 beat me. I can't hear a bit of difference between most of them.
Oh, that comes with practice. You hear no difference at first, but you keep on listening, and presently you find they're all as different as A from B. Mm. What's the matter?
A young woman wants to see you, sir.
A young woman? What does she want?
Well, sir, she says you'll be glad to see her when you know what she's come about. She's quite a common girl, sir. Very common indeed. I should have sent her away, only I thought perhaps you wanted her to talk into your machines. I hope I've not done wrong, but really you see such queer people sometimes. Oh, you'll excuse me, I'm sure, sir.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. Pierce. Has she an interesting accent?
Oh, something dreadful, sir, really. I don't know how you can take an interest in it.
Let's have her up. Show her up, Mrs. Pierce.
Very well, sir. It's for you to say.
This is rather a bit of luck. I'll show you how I make records. We'll set her talking, and I'll take it down first in Bell's visible speech, then in broad Romic. And then we'll get her on the phonograph, so that you can turn her on as often as you like with the written transcript before you.
This is the young woman, sir.
Tape script 13B. Pygmalion, extract 3.
Why, this is the girl I jotted down last night. She's no use. I've got all the records I want of the Listen Grove lingo, and I'm not going to waste another cylinder on it. Be off with you. I don't want you.
Don't you be so saucy. You ain't heard what I come for yet. Did you tell him I'll come in a taxi?
Nonsense, girl. What do you think a gentleman like Mr. Higgins cares what you came in?
Oh, we are proud. He ain't above giving lessons. Not him. I heard him say so. Well, I ain't come here to ask for any compliment, and if my money's not good enough, I can go elsewhere.
Good enough for what?
Good enough for you. Now you know, don't you? I'm come to have lessons, I am. And to pay for them too. Make no mistake.
Well, what do you expect me to say to you?
Well, if you was a gentleman, you might ask me to sit down, I think. Don't I tell you I'm bringing you business?
Pickering, shall we ask this baggage to sit down or shall we throw her out of the window?
Oh, I won't be called a baggage when I've offered to pay like any lady.
What is it you want, my girl?
I want to be a lady in a flower shop, instead of selling at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. But they won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. He said he could teach me. Well, here I am, ready to pay him, not asking any favour, and he treats me as if I was dirt.
How can you be such a foolish, ignorant girl as to think you could afford to pay Mr. Higgins?
Why shouldn't I? I know what lessons cost as well as you do, and I'm ready to pay.
How much?
Now you're talking. I thought you come off it when you saw a chance of getting back a bit of what you chucked at me last night. You had a drop in. Hadn't you?
Sit down.
If you're going to make a compliment...
Sit down!
Sit down, girl. Do as you're told.
No.
Won't you sit down?
Don't mind if I do.
Now, what's your name?
Liza Doolittle.
How much do you propose to pay me for the lessons?
Oh, I know what's right. A lady friend of mine gets French lessons for 18 pence an hour from a real French gentleman. Well, you wouldn't have the face to ask me the same for teaching me my own language as you would for French. So, I won't give more than a shilling. Take it or leave it.
You know, Pickering, if you consider a shilling not as a simple shilling, but as a percentage of this girl's income, it works out as fully equivalent to 60 or 70 guineas from a millionaire.
How so?
Figure it out. A millionaire has about £150 a day. She earns about half a crown.
Who told you
I... She offers me 2/5 of her day's income for a lesson. 2/5 of a millionaire's income for a day would be somewhere about £60. It's handsome. By George, it's enormous. It's the biggest offer I've ever had.
£60? What are you talking about? I never offered you £60. Where would I...
Hold your tongue.
I ain't got £60.
Don't cry, you silly girl. Sit down. Nobody's going to touch your money.
Somebody's going to touch you with a broomstick if you don't stop snivelling. Sit down.
Oh, one would think you was my father.
If I decide to teach you, I'll be worse than two fathers to you. Here.
What's this for?
To wipe your eyes. To wipe any part of your face that feels moist. Remember, that's your handkerchief, that's your sleeve. Don't mistake the one for the other if you wish to become a lady in a shop.
It's no use talking to her like that, Mr. Higgins. She doesn't understand you. Besides, you're quite wrong. She doesn't do it that way at all.
Here! You give me the handkerchief. He gave it to me, not to you.
He did. I think it must be regarded as her property, Mrs. Pierce.
Serve you right, Mr. Higgins.
Higgins, I'm interested. What about the ambassador's garden party? I'll say you're the greatest teacher alive if you can make that good. I'll bet you all the expenses of the experiment you can't do it, and I'll pay for the lessons.
Oh, you are real good. Thank you, Captain.
It's almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low, so horribly dirty.
Oh, I ain't dirty. I'll wash my face and hands afore I come, I did.
You're certainly not going to turn her head with flattery, Higgins.
Oh, don't say that, sir. There's more ways than one of turning a girl's head, and nobody can do it better than Mr. Higgins, though he may not always mean it. I do hope, sir, you won't encourage him to do anything foolish.
What is life but a series of inspired follies? The difficulty is to find them to do. Never lose a chance. It doesn't come every day. I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed guttersnipe. Yes, in 6 months. In 3, if she has a good ear and a quick tongue. I'll take her anywhere and pass her off as anything. We'll start today. Now, this moment. Take her away and clean her, Mrs. Pierce.
Tape script 13C. Pygmalion, extract 4.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins? Mr. Higgins told me I might come.
Quite right. I'm very glad indeed to see you.
How do you do, Miss Doolittle?
Colonel Pickering, is it not?
I feel sure we've met before, Miss Doolittle. I remember your eyes.
How do you do?
My daughter Clara.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I've certainly had the pleasure.
My son Freddy.
How do you do?
Will it rain, do you think?
The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move slowly in an easterly direction. There are no indications of any great change in the barometrical situation.
How awfully funny!
What is wrong with that, young man? I bet I got it right.
Killing!
I'm sure I hope it won't turn cold. There's so much influenza about it runs right through our whole family regularly every spring.
My aunt died of influenza, so they said. But it's my belief they done the old woman in.
Done her in?
Yes, Lord love you. Why should she die of influenza? She come through diphtheria right enough the year before. I saw her with my own eyes. Fairly blue with it, she was. They all thought she was dead. But my father, he kept ladling gin down her throat till she came to so sudden that she bit the bowl off the spoon.
Dear me.
What call would a woman with that strength in her have to die of influenza? What become of her new straw hat that should have come to me? somebody pinched it. And what I say is, them as pinched it, done her in.
What does doing her in mean?
That's the new small talk. To do a person in means to kill them.
You surely don't believe that your aunt was killed.
Do I not? Them she lived with would have killed her for a hat pin, let alone a hat.
But it can't have been right for your father to pour spirits down her throat like that. It might have killed her.
Not her. Gin was mother's milk to her. Besides, he'd poured so much down his own throat that he knew the good of it.
Do you mean that he drank?
Drank? My word, something chronic.
How dreadful for you.
Not a bit. It never did him no harm, what I could see. But then he did not keep it up regular. Here, what are you sniggering at?
The new small talk. You do it so awfully well.
If I was doing it proper, what was you laughing at? Have I said anything I oughtn't?
Not at all, Miss Doolittle.
Well, that's a mercy anyhow. What I always say is... Well, I must go. So pleased to have met you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Colonel Pickering.
Goodbye, Miss Doolittle.
Goodbye, all.
Are you walking across the park, Miss Doolittle? If so,
walk? Not bloody likely. I am going in a taxi.
Tape script 14. A monologue.
Quite honestly, I don't know how you've put up with it for all these years. Personally, I would have left after a few weeks. After all, it's not as though it was your fault. I mean to say, he was the one that was so keen on it in the first place. Actually, he had to work really hard to persuade you, if I remember rightly. Frankly, I think you should remind him of that a bit more often. You are still speaking to each other, presumably. I wouldn't blame you if you weren't. Seriously, though, enough is enough. Admittedly, he wasn't to know, but he should have made it his job to find out. After all, he always prides himself on his thoroughness. Ideally, he should have had it surveyed properly. Of course it costs a bit, but it's always worth it. Obviously, he trusted his own judgment. Well, all I can say is it certainly let him down badly this time. Let's hope he's learnt a lesson from it. Next time, and I hope it's soon for your sake, maybe he'll listen to you. Surely he will. Incidentally, do you know the Turners are thinking of moving to the same estate? As a matter of fact, Jane was telling me they've already viewed a couple of properties. In all fairness, we'll just have to warn them. Perhaps you should get Jack to tell them.
Tape script 15. Dialogues for completion.
Example.
There's some crab in the fridge if you're hungry, but I don't suppose you like seafood, do you?
As a matter of fact, I adore seafood.
One.
Have you heard that Jane is thinking of getting married to that chap Paul?
Quite honestly.
Two.
I don't know where she met him.
If I remember rightly...
3.
I wonder if they'll have a church wedding or go to a registry office.
Presumably.
4.
He's been married 3 times before. Did you know that?
Actually.
5.
I think she's too young, too immature for marriage.
I really don't think so. After all...
6.
I wonder why they want to get married.
Obviously.
7.
I'm sure they'll both be very happy.
So am I. Incidentally...
8.
I'd like to congratulate them, but I don't know when I'll see them again.
As a matter of fact...
9.
Ah, well. Good old Jane and Paul.
Best of luck to them. Anyway,
End of side 2.